So Buddha's awakening was to the interconnectedness of all things, and the mind and body of Buddha is the interconnectedness of all things. And the unfolding of the 7-day transmission ceremony was very much about the mind and body of Buddha and the interconnectedness. The ceremony has a lot to do with the lineage from the 7 Buddhas before Buddha, through Shakyamuni, through Dogen, through Suzuki, and up to Catherine. As Jean said last week, very much a devotional practice to our men and women ancestors. In addition to the bows, we studied the lineage, we embodied the lineage with our calligraphy, copying our transmission papers, several times writing down the names of the Buddhas and ancestors, and tracing the red line through each one. Did my glasses make it into... Thank you.
Sorry.
It's okay. Each day, we chanted the name of each ancestor, did an incense offering, and did a prostration. And before that ceremony, which took about 45 minutes, we chanted this paragraph from Dogen. Now, actualizing the Buddha ancestors means to bring them forth and look at them respectfully. It is not limited to the Buddhas of the past, present, and future, but it is going beyond Buddhas who are going beyond themselves. It is taking up those who have maintained the face and eye of Buddha ancestors, formally bowing and meeting them. They have manifested the virtue of the Buddha ancestors, dwelt in it, and actualized it in the body. And then we did this incredible body practice of chanting and bowing and meeting each one of those Buddhas, formally bowing and meeting them, as Dogen says. I've met a few of these ancestors. Catherine, of course, who I see regularly. Tenshin Reb Anderson, who I've seen quite a bit over the years. I've been to a few lectures by Zentatsu Baker Roshi. And so these are faces that doing this exercise, doing this practice, you can just see floating in front of our kind of blank slate Buddha figure. But as you do, all of these ancestors, the thought is that all of them, including the six before Shakyamuni Buddha, are sitting with us right here in the Zendo, supporting our practice here at Santa Cruz Zen Center. And we bring those up every time we chant the names of the Buddhas and ancestors, and we do that regularly during our Sesshin time, and I was glad to do it time and again over the 7 days. It's not limited to the past, present, and future, according to Dogen. It is not limited to the Buddhas of the past, present, and future, but is going beyond Buddhas who are going beyond themselves. So, at every opportunity of meeting the Buddhas in this way, we're acknowledging their practice over the centuries, right here and right now, acknowledging dwelling in the causes and conditions over the centuries that have all lined up to bring Buddhism to 115 School Street and to our practice right here and right now. This face-to-face transmission is something we enact when we meet Catherine, when we meet each other. So as we chant the Buddha names, we're really looking at this very narrow stream of causes and conditions that we know about for how Buddhism got right here in our Zendo, in our hearts and our minds. Many more causes and conditions went into that, of course. But over and over again, over the 7 days, we chanted this this stream of people who played their part in pushing the stream to our front door. And as we wrote the names of the Buddhas and ancestors, of course, then we trailed that thinnest red line all the way through. So it's my point being here is that we think we can identify this one narrow stream of causes and conditions, but there's an infinite tangle of causes and conditions over the centuries that brought us to the Zendo here right now. Jean talked about the fascicle that we've studied here, about the twining vines of interconnected activities over the centuries that we're all a part of. One experience that I had and I can remember is I was a little worried about the calligraphy. I haven't done calligraphy in a few decades, and I never did it very much. And it's a big part of that 7 days, many hours each day. And I made ink most every day. I didn't learn until towards the end that you could actually, there was a way of saving the ink, to go day after day. But it took a while to grind that ink stick down into the inkwell, the kind of slate inkwell that had a little bite to it, that bit off little bits of that ink. And it started off with just trying not to splash, you know, just figuring out what the movement was going to be so that I could do it for 15 minutes or so and not splash. And then as soon as you put that in there and you had the clear water and the gray slate inkwell, you could start seeing this cloud of black ink form. And you know, and actually very soon it all became black, although the ink was still watery and not really black ink. But so, you know, you started off with your hand, and all of a sudden there was, it grabbed your eyes, so another sense organ was pulled in. After a few more minutes, you could start smelling the ink. It smells like a lot of the inks we used in grade school, actually, kind of a water-based ink. So all of a sudden you've got your eyes, your hand, your smell, of course you're hearing the ink scrape. I really became aware of in the first few minutes all of my senses, my whole body being pulled in. And of course, you know, at some point it's just all connected. This being the ink, the project that lies before me. And you know, it starts off with me saying, oh gosh, can I get this done? Can I do this? I was copying these big documents that looked a little overwhelming. And in those first 15 minutes, you're just pulled in. Even before your first stroke of the brush, you're just pulled in. So so actually, you know, by the second day or so, I wasn't even minding this process because it was so valuable in just getting, you know, this whole body and mind pulled together. So the ceremony was about lineage and bowing and documents and very moving face-to-face ceremonies with Catherine and meeting people throughout the week that were preparing meals or carrying incense, helping out Catherine. Like Hillary says, it takes a village to get that ceremony accomplished. But prior to these 7 days, there were many months of sowing. It seemed like the process of transmission was all about sowing. And I think, when did you first start having the classes, Jean? In May? Yeah. I think maybe, did I join the class in May? So 7 months. Excuse me. And in the last few weeks, when Jean was in his ceremony and I was still needing help, I turned to another sewing teacher in Monterey, Kathy Wilden. So Jean I worked with for months and months, and very appreciative of his teaching on sewing, and Kathy was very helpful the last few weeks. And many of us have sewn rakusus. You know that each stitch we chant in Japanese, Namu Kiyebutsu, I take refuge in Buddha. I take refuge in Buddha. And so here is another example of this kind of mind and body concentration practice, like making of the ink. With the, you know, holding the needle, holding the cloth, chanting certain words to certain parts of the stroke of the needle, very much a concentration practice. So, and taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, of course, is one of the core practices of Buddhism. And we do it every morning here in our morning service. How do I understand this? And refuge, as you might know, has the word, the Latin word to fly in it, fugit. It means to fly back home. To just fly back home. So think about, you know, coming home from college. Think about coming home from vacation. And you may have had a wonderful time in the first semester of college, or you may have had a wonderful time on your vacation. But there's nothing like sinking into your own bed, sinking into your own chairs, having your refrigerator filled with your own food, the food that you know you like, the food that you can cook just the way you like it. A common way of understanding, you know, refuge is just to wholeheartedly bring this body into your environment. Not rejecting anything, the way you wouldn't reject your comforter, or the way you wouldn't reject the food in your refrigerator. Accepting everything in your environment with this body and mind. Dwelling completely, you know, right now, in the now. Having a relationship with your environment, like Goldilocks, you know, this soup is just right. You're not rejecting anything. Dogen wrote a fascicle, "Such is the way," this Thomas Cleary translation, "suchness, I've seen it," or "thus," or "thusness." It starts out, "Master Ungo was the heir of Tozan, a principal ancestor of the Tozan school. One day he said to the congregation, 'If you want to attain such a thing, you must be such a person. Since you are such a person, why trouble about such a thing?' That is," and this is Dogen, "that is to say, to consider attaining such a thing, one must be such a person. Already being such a person, why trouble about such a thing? The basic message of this is directly proceeding towards unexcelled enlightenment, is the moment called such." So, suchness is, I think, what Suzuki meant when he used the phrase "things as it is." Everything is such, is just as it is. And "you are such a person" can be turned around. A person is such. A person is just the way it is. Um, things come about through this infinite tangle of causes and conditions, you know, starting with a beginningless time. And it is in this moment just as it is because of all those unperceptible tangles of causes and conditions. We sometimes get hooked into this practice of Zen when we hear that we're perfect just the way we are. And initially this is appealing to those of us who've spent a lot of time thinking that we're not so perfect, or maybe it appeals to our narcissism that yeah, somebody's finally seeing it. I think a deeper understanding of things are, that you're perfect just as you are, is that there's no other outcome of all those centuries of tangled causes and conditions than just what's manifesting right now. It's perfect in its no otherness. And we can't get out of it. There's no place that we can get out of these tangled vines, where we can say, yeah, this is happening. I can see this leads to this, leads to this. We're in it every minute. It's happening right now. And this outcome right now is the only way it could possibly be. It's perfect in that way. So in that's what it means that a person is such. We are such. We are things just as it is. So taking refuge is in this moment, wholeheartedly accepting all of those causes and conditions, not rejecting them. Every stitch, this is just where I am. I finished this much of the robe. There's no other way to experience this moment than to just wholeheartedly, with all the senses, with your eyes, with your ears, with touch, with smell, just to sink in to that moment. Welcome it as perfect, rejecting nothing. That was my experience of sewing, taking refuge with each stitch. Sometimes I could listen to music and still sew and accept the moment. That was my experience of the week. Quite a body practice. Quite a practice in those 7 days, involving all the senses. I thank Rob, as Rob talked about last week, and Jean. He's made this teaching stick, Nyoi. Is that right?
Or Kotsu.
And this was my first outing with it, managing managing the zagu and the kotsu and the bows, getting up, getting down. It's beautiful. Thank you very much. Any questions, any thoughts? Several of you were helping out with my ceremony, with Jean's ceremony. You got a look at it. Many more of you were here in the mornings and the evenings when our sittings overlapped and were aware that it was going on, and really kind of took up, you know, all of the property with the food, with the altars, the new altars that are throughout the center. People might have thoughts about that. Jean.
I guess this might be the first time I've heard anyone mention Goldilocks and Dogen in this first
time. Well, thank you. Thank you. We learn suchness where we can.
I'm wondering what you can say about Goldilocks or us having to experiment a little bit with too hot, too cold before we land on just right.
Well, of course, that's the part of the story that I didn't talk about, the part where you're picking and choosing before you land on the here and now, and accepting everything in the universe as just right. And maybe that is the same process that I went through with the calligraphy. You know, those moments that it was just too big. Will I ever finish? Will it be neat enough? Will I spill? Going through that process before just settling down, gathering all of those parts that I've spewed out there. Can I do that? Will I achieve this? So the mind, my mind, does that for a while, circling closer and closer to this body and mind in this moment, and finally getting into the ink. So of course that's the process, that's the practice, that's the effort we bring. That's kind of Dogen's solution to if everything is perfect, you know, what the hey? Why do we, you know, come here and sit cross-legged? And the answer is, you bring that effort, and you actually get to sit in the easy chair of this moment and appreciate the soup. Just one. Catherine gave me a book of poetry by Peter Levitt, who has a connection with San Francisco. Do you know Peter Levitt? San Francisco Zen Center.
Is he the one who helped translate the Shobogenzo?
Yes, and he's now living in Canada, and he's, you know, had several poetry books published, but one of them is. Has the line in it, you know, we all type in www, but who thinks to think about what that means? So anyway, Christine. The brown robe and the bowing mat, the zagu, and then there's the rakusu. There's some blue ones here, and so there's a brown rakusu. So it's a three-part sewing process, a sewing project. Thank you. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Illusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Thank you.